Longer Days Collective.
This is Take Two.
Is Take Two.
Cheers.
Yes, sir. Boom. Thank you very much.
Boom. How are you doing, Finn?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good.
Upbeat. I already named him.
Yes. Nah, yeah, Finn's all good. That's my real name.
Yeah. So obviously, like, I took a look at your Spotify for a hot sec.
Good.
40,000 monthly streams.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get to that?
Straight to the real questions. Mm. How do we get to
that? We don't bullshit around here, mate.
Like, the long story is, for many years I've been doing music since I was like 11. So I've been through many different ways of how music comes out, whether it's from like CDs when I was like 14, 15, like handing out CDs and shit like that, and trying to sell them and all that kind of stuff. And then it would have been SoundCloud and then obviously Spotify. But what's interesting with me with Spotify is that I've gone through like three different shifts of like genre. So initially I started with this kind of project called Enter Aquarius, which is kind of like trap R&B kind of vibes. So I built up a following, again, similar numbers that time, but then it never really stuck. And then I kind of moved into like dance and like big top line vocals, again, reached similar, if not bigger numbers. Similar numbers.
Okay.
And then it kind of, I guess, like, it wasn't fully where my heart was at the time. Neither of those genres were, I guess. They're still a massive part of me, but they didn't embody everything that I was, I guess. And then anytime I would stop promoting my stuff again, it would kind of all go back down. Not drastically, but like it would go from like 40 to 30 or something like that. And I'd be like, oh, well, like, what's the point? Not even what's the point, but just like, whereas this time it was kind of built up over, there's a certain amount of people, probably 10,000 people that have come through that whole journey, if you get me. And then the rest are just kind of new over the years. And in the nitty gritty of it, it's mostly just like YouTube channels and, you know, TikTok. And I work in marketing, so I'm quite obsessed with just like experiences and how audiences are built. So I take quite a grassroots, like step-by-step approach, because I'm a big believer in, if you build a small core audience or community, you can scale that, because you understand and you understand and they understand you. So when you're scaling it, you know exactly what you're trying to do and what they want and what they don't want. Whereas if you're kind of running around, like even when I was doing the dance stuff, I didn't really fully understand that world, maybe to the same extent. So I'm putting out these songs, they're doing well or whatever, but I'm not able to build a community around it. Whereas with kind of Hi-Viz and Hyperpunk and all this stuff, it's exactly who I am. Like, I grew up around the skate park, around music, around all these things, and that's what this is. So yeah, I guess the short answer is that I just kept kind of building out a community and kind of creating different funnels that people can fall into. And this time the 40, like, I haven't promoted anything since September, I don't think, in regards to like running ads or YouTube channel placements or anything like that. And it's all stuck, if not grown.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of just testament to building something that's real, I guess, and that really is matters.
But, and being like authentically yourself, I guess, as well at the end of the day.
Yeah, but I think even going a step beyond that, there's like, because I remember I've been told that so many times, be yourself.
Yeah, man, like,
be
yourself. It's so like, repetitive.
There's different versions of yourself. Do you get me? When I was doing like trap stuff, that was me. Like, that,
that's what I was thinking.
Like,
yeah.
I loved that. When I was doing dance stuff, like, and the only thing I managed to do with this new genre, or whatever you want to call it, is actually just amalgamate them all together.
Mm.
So even though, like, I was never not being myself, I was always very much being myself.
You weren't putting
it was just, yeah, finding what actually resonated and what was the most natural and what could kind of scale, because the dance and trap stuff probably couldn't the same way this does. And also, I think it's coming across something unique. I'm not like, there's no one in my lane, there's no one in Ireland that does what I do in regards to overall, like, there's no one, there's bands, there's solo artists that make trap, there's yada yada, there's like literally just me and my friends are the only people that make this kind of music at the moment, to this stature, with this kind of a vibe. And when you create something that isn't really the same as what everyone else does, either it gets rejected or people love it and kind of jump on board. And I think in this case, it's been people jumping on board and wanting to be a part of it, because it's not really competing with anything else. It's not like I'm here being like, oh, I'm the biggest Irish artist. I'm not in any way.
No.
But in my little world of what I'm doing, people appreciate that and probably don't know a lot of the other artists, which is, I guess, kind of nice as well.
And what do you do, like, music-wise that makes you and your friends then, right now, like, in the lane that you've created for yourself?
I think there's a deep passion to, like, and again, I don't know necessarily if this is new, because I see it happening among everyone. I think for me specifically, what stands out is I'm trying to tell the story of the West of Ireland. And I think that the story of the West of Ireland is a very sad story. It's a very motivating story. It's a very just dramatic story in general.
West of Ireland, you're saying like where you're from?
Yeah, but like the whole coast of the West of Ireland, because there's a lot of relations when you go across those points. There's a lot of stories that are very similar, and that's kind of when I go, I've traveled a lot as well, and when I go to other places, there's certain things. It's also a thing of community, like when you see small communities, even just rural communities, not necessarily just the West of Ireland. I guess that's what I pull from that probably makes my stuff different. But outside of that, it's a thing of like, again, I came up from like rave culture, and like all my friends listen to techno and like are super passionate about that. But I also listen to a lot of bands and hip hop stuff, and it's like creating a world where all that stuff fits in. But naturally, it doesn't sound like, oh, let's put an 808 on a rock beat and now it's trap. It's like, no, it's like, how do you actually form a whole feeling and experience around the amalgamation of these things? And I don't even know if we've done it yet. it's a process, but that's where it comes from, I'd say. Yeah.
And the element of you coming from a small town and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
How did that... I think everyone knows how it could shape, not you personally, but how it could shape a person.
Yeah.
But what are the experiences that you had that make you you right now?
I was chatting to someone the other day about this, and they say that, what is it, the whole thing of like a village raises a child, and that whole thing of like in today's world, just like one person or two people, or like this whole kind of rejecting of the family and community in general is something. And when you're from a small town, it's very easy for you to reject that as well, because you're like, man, no one here, it's like me, or it's like these things.
Yeah.
But I'd say, yeah, to be honest, like the skate park had a massive part to do with it, because like that's just where we went every day, and I'm not good at skating, never been good at skating, but I've always been around that kind of culture, and that like that's where I started being creative. I guess I used to film videos for everyone, and we'd travel all around Ireland, and when I was 15 I'd be going down to Limerick and going to Waterford and Dublin and just all these places on my own, meeting other people in these communities. So I think that's probably the defining factor, is I was always looking for more, and because of that found it. But in regards to like, yeah, the whole small town thing is funny as well, because I kind of cherish the whole small town thing. Obviously, it's like there's a lot of backwardsness to it, and there's a lot of downsides, but I think there's a lot of downsides anyway, like to be honest. And I think the more I grow up now as well, I have a friend called Pork who I literally talk about this all the time, is specifically with the West of Ireland, there's like this darkness over it. And when I was growing up, you'd listen to like 50 Cent or Eminem, and you hear about, oh, like the hood and like how rough it was there. And then as a kid, I'd be like, oh, well, how do I write about where I'm from? Because I just wouldn't be able to put it into words, because I wouldn't find a way of glorifying it, figuring a way. And then as I kind of grow older, I really start to see how tragic it is, like where I'm from and how much stuff there is that happens. Not in a glitzy people shooting each other and running down the street, but just in this pure like generational trauma from what's happened over many generations in the West of Ireland.
I agree with you entirely. I think that's something that I'm kind of going through in my head right now as well. So coming from such a small country, there was also that element of...
You're from Malta, isn't it?
Yeah. So. That's like a third the size of Laos.
Yeah,
that's so great. If we're going to talk about small town boys, you know?
That's wild.
Like for anyone that's not Irish or Maltese... Louth is Ireland's smallest county. So I come from an entire country that is a third the size of it.
Yeah.
And I do get that, because it's kind of like you look up to, you're growing up watching like entertainment, music, that sort of thing. And it's like stories of people who made it.
Yeah.
But you do not have that person to look up to.
In your surrounding or whatever, yeah.
And then you kind of get in your head as well, you know what I mean? Because then you're just like, oh, okay, my struggles are not valid.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
That's exactly it.
And like, that's it.
Every struggle is valid. And it's about talking about them.
Of course, there is always going to be that element that someone could have it worse off than you.
Yeah.
Always going to happen. But... it's kind of just coming to a point in your life that everyone usually gets to, where you kind of have to acknowledge that, okay, I was not born in LA. Being born in LA could have given me massive opportunities, you know?
Yeah.
But you don't know, like, those people also have that struggle.
Yeah.
As in, like, it comes with everything. And I do think that Europeans, we do have... I'm not going to say the odds against us, but the opportunities are lacking for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And I think we're so at competition with each other all the time, where we're kind of like dragging each other down quite a lot.
Yeah, no, and that's definitely a small country thing as well.
It's a small country. Yeah. It's just like, no, but you're not going to do that. You are going to work your 9 to 5.
Yeah.
You're going to get an education because that is
what you're supposed to do. Yeah.
You're supposed to do. But
one thing I do find with that, and I'm blessed enough to kind of get to, I guess, navigate in different groups of people and like different wealth brackets and talk to different people from these different worlds. And one thing you do realize is like, so I come from like a quote unquote working class background. And even though like this was never stuff that my parents put on me, but just being around that sort of, I don't know, like group of people and like other families and things, you kind of feel this like, oh, fuck the rich. Like, yeah, sorry, I don't know. Am I able to swear or not?
Oh, okay. Yes, it's entirely explicit. Okay. Don't worry.
Like this anti-rich or like anti the top mentality until you reach, you have a friend that's like mid there and you're like, wait, but they're not the evil person either. And then you look up another bracket and you go, well, they're not the evil person either. And you find that everyone's like no matter where you are on the bracket. So everyone's pointing to the person above going, it's them. Da, da, da. They're the ones that are condemning us when really, yeah, I mean, getting to that whole other conversation in systems and societal norms. But one thing I find very interesting is that everyone's like, you have it so hard. If you're a trust fund baby and you had all the money in the world, it's like, where do you find motivation from? Like, where do you get ambition out of? Because you've got everything.
Yep.
And all those, and again, not saying that anyone's struggle isn't hard, it is, but everything is kind of, it just depends on who you are, because everyone's got struggles and they're really big to them, even if they're tiny to someone else.
Exactly.
Which is very strange. It's something I definitely get a lot more context on as I get older.
And it's what you do with those struggles as well.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it does come down to the person's like responsibility to make sure that they do not screw up someone else's life.
Yeah, for sure.
Because of that. And I do think that our generation are doing quite a good job at like that self-awareness. There has been a little bit of a shift.
Completely.
You know?
Yeah.
And that is our good karma, dare I say.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it's like, I had someone on before and they were kind of saying that like, look, yes, times are shit right now, but I wouldn't trade places with my parents' generation or my grandparents. And that is so fucking true.
Yeah.
Like, you have nail polish on.
Yeah.
You know? As in, if our parents, like if our did dads were wearing nail polish, it would have been a very different story. Not that.
No, for sure. No, you know? Literally. And it is. And that's one thing that I talked to my dad about this a lot, actually, when I'm probably will get into like the Web3 stuff and NFT stuff. But even like seeing the access right now, and this like whatever about anything else, whatever about fucking the way society is, right now there is the biggest redistribution of wealth we've ever seen. There is more people in their 20s, more people who care about art and creativity and wellness that have created wealth for themselves, whether it was out of like creating a product or investing in crypto a couple of years ago or whatever it is. The mentality of people that have money now is a completely different shift. And if we can convince those people and become those people ourselves, you're looking at a completely different generation and a completely different set of values going onto the next one. And that's kind of what excites me, because I came from, again, just an alternative working class background. I was just a kid who's fucking made music and skated and stuff like that. I was just around that. And I never thought I would have any place in certain rooms or in a room talking to someone about like coding or fucking finance or anything like that. I was like, I'm not allowed there. I'm not supposed to be there until you find that you are. And that when you actually, we have so many assumptions in our heads that we're not welcome in places, when in reality you are. You just gotta fucking go enter and see.
You have to ask.
See, you know? Knock on the door. Because you find that you're a lot more capable than you think you are. And
for sure.
Everything's very accessible and very doable with the likes of, well, YouTube and stuff like that. So
exactly. Yeah. The one thing that I wrote down over here, right, is being an independent artist.
Mm, yeah,
and
we're big on that over here.
Oh yeah, bada bing, bada boom. And the first thing that I saw in your story when I followed you was you shared something about Russ.
Mm, yeah,
Jared Russ. Yeah.
I love Russ.
Russ is going Russ through my head all the fucking time. I've read his book, everything.
Yeah,
his book's great. Is such a massive inspiration.
Dope.
Because there's a lot that anyone can learn from him when it comes to like confidence.
Yeah, completely.
How has Russ inspired you?
Well, like to be honest, virtually everything.
Probably.
So it's quite funny, because again, if you just look at it from the outside, it wouldn't look like it matches up from the sounds and the sonics and stuff like that. But no, I relate to Russ heavily, because Well, when I'm, again, I'm always trying to find a different way of doing something. And that's just something that excites me. And his whole approach at the time, obviously, it's not as relevant now, but the whole like song a week and the whole pushing of that initially was what I found. But initially also what I found very interesting about Russ was I was shown Russ by, I think it was a Brazilian girl. And this girl was crazy about Russ, right? So off the bat, like, if you look at Russ's audience now, you'd be like, oh, it's like just male entrepreneurs that like are trying to chase a dream or some shit is like into Russ. But like seeing his impact because of the different kind of sonics and different genres he made and his like attention to detail in knowing that if there's like a lot of fans in Brazil, that he's going to do things in the lyrics to tie into Brazil and like yes. bringing that whole thing. So I think, again, like the community aspect, putting the value and betting on yourself essentially, but also just In the music industry, in the music business, we never talk about the business. We all talk about metrics that don't actually matter and the music itself, which is beautiful if we're having a creative conversation. But all these industry talks and these business talks are not around an artist seeing profit. They're about artists spending money or making money, but the profit line is tiny every single day of the week. And when I kind of knew that already, but when I started listening to Russ and seeing his whole thing of the catalog and how like, obviously if you have a larger catalog of independently owned songs, it's like a bank and you own that. And obviously over time, as you get bigger, more people will stream those songs and discover those songs and essentially just creating a different model. But the book by Russ, I would 100%, like it's a Bible. It's a Bible for artists.
Yes, it literally is
the Bible for artists.
You can read it in probably 4 hours. Yeah, not even.
Yeah,
like,
it's tiny. I run the audiobook. I just run it like
all
the time.
Well, I haven't listened to the audiobook.
Yeah, I think so. It's only a couple hours as well. It's brilliant. But I guess last thing on that note as well is most of my like, this is just something I find very interesting, is like most of the artists that I love are like the most hated artists. Because obviously Russ is hated. People hate Russ because of his like... I guess his abrasive like attitude or his like the way he holds himself, which I personally love. I think it's great. But yeah, it's just one thing I know. I was thinking about this today. I was like, literally all my favorite artists are people that people just hate for some reason. But it's probably because they're outside the box and they're doing something that a lot of people can't understand. But if you were to go solely off of fans, like, you know, Russ has more fans than any other artist really out there at the moment, apart from your Drakes and your Kendrick Lamar's, like that's it. Like, so I don't think he's actually that hated. I think he's just media perceived as hated.
That's the one thing that I noticed while I have started to slowly embark on like independently distributing this and doing this alone.
Congratulations, that's the way to go. Yeah,
cheers. People really don't support you.
Yeah.
Like and that's something that a lot of people, I think artists do get discouraged by.
Completely. It's the most discouraging thing in the world.
Because honestly, and I'm catching myself here because I know that I have to share like two songs of like people I know that like I do tend to forget. So I'm kind of like stomping on my own toes here too. But even if you do have a really solid piece of work, so many people A would not share it or at least like congratulate you or like back you up. To the point where I understand why they do get discouraged because they're like, look, if my own circle...
Yeah, don't support it. Whatever.
Don't support
it. I completely agree with that, but I
think... Did this ever discourage you at a point?
Yeah.
Like when you started out?
I definitely do. I get a couple of things. So like I did receive support from the start, and that's one thing that like... Again, I used to spend a lot of time in Castlebar, which is like the town over from where I'm from, and it was just like... Again, a bunch of skaters, lots of travelers.
Skate community is super supportive.
Yeah, exactly there. And again, the traveler community is a community that I had massive support from as well when I was growing up. And just like, just lads was like, yeah, man, do it. Like, just with like, you know, you spit your lyrics and people were like, yeah, man, that's class. And I think growing up, even though I might not got the direct support from like just the town or whatever, because obviously people think that stuff's shit, like when you're growing up. But I got a lot of support from people outside of that. So I was very grateful in that thing. But I think... On the real page, it's like it's an intrinsic thing, and it's validation, and it's a seek for validation. And when we really let go of that, like yes, we should get support, and I try to support as many people as I can because I know how it feels and I know what you need. But in reality, you don't need any of it, and anyone's support that's coming from family doesn't matter anyway because they're not a fan. Like anyone from your town, they're not a fan. They're not the target audience for what you're doing. And you have to kind of step, not you specifically, like you're doing great, but just outside of, and this is something I just have to tell myself today, and again, this is one of my friends, Matthew, really instilled this into my head. It was like, all these things inside are just ego. Like, it's all validation that you think you need this because you put this out and because you think it's great. If it really is great, go and get the eyes on it. Go and prove yourself, bet on yourself again, because some people are lucky enough. Some artists get discovered and they get supported, but 9 out of 10 times, most people don't. It's an incredible amount of work and an incredible amount of, again, betting on yourself every single day that the product is good enough. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But that's kind of my answer to that, is you can't expect anyone to support. And they will eventually, they kind of jump along. But I mean, a lot of people have spite against those people, like, oh, people didn't support me, but now they do. It's like, I love that people support me now that didn't. I'm like, you didn't get it at the time. I hadn't proved myself to you yet. Like, I didn't deserve your praise because I hadn't proved myself. I have proved myself now to these people. Mm. And now they're all on board. So I think, like, that whole, like, fake love and that whole thing, I think a lot of it's inside. And obviously that's hard to take accountability for that. But I think really a lot of the answers are just, like, get over it and fucking move on, because you're not entitled to the support of the people around you. Now, obviously, when you take art away from it and you take, like, your work away from it, you're entitled to love from the people and you're entitled to be able to have a conversation, be able to talk to the people around you. And if you're not getting that, that's a red flag.
Yeah.
But not everyone around you has to be there screaming and supporting. Some of the core supports of me don't necessarily jump around my music all day, but they fucking save my life many times.
Yeah, they outside of that.
So I think you can't judge that just off of what you do. And again, would you judge, like, if they're making coffee every day, are you there going, yo man, that coffee's sick, like, maybe you're not, like, so
yeah.
Just because it's creative doesn't mean we have to get the support either, I guess.
Yeah. And I think it's just the concept of making sure that you keep showing up.
Yeah,
like, something that I've been, like, repeating in my head recently is just, like, this could be it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the fuck it is for me.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, the more I keep going, the more I'm learning, the better I'm getting.
Well, I say with what you're doing, this is a perfect example of that. If you'd sent the podcast to one of your friends and maybe they didn't listen to it, they didn't care. When your podcast came up on TikTok, I saw the video. Instantly, I was like, this is sick. The edit was nice. There was two things. It was short. It was the right amount of time that it should be for TikTok. And I was like, this is an engaging piece of content. I enjoy it. I didn't go listen to the podcast. Full I didn't thing. Jump on.
Yeah.
But I was like, whatever this person's doing, I didn't know who you were at the time. I was just like, this is dope. This is great. So even that's an example of, like, stepping up the quality and proving it. Like,
yeah.
And you did do that. So
exactly.
I'm just a random person you don't know. So,
two strangers on the internet. It is just a numbers game at the end of the day, and making sure that you get eyes on it.
The right eyes, though.
The right eyes.
Yeah.
TikTok usually doesn't get
a lot of the right eyes. Yeah. Man, there's no more hate than the hate on TikTok.
My fucking god, don't get me started, mate. I am like, as in, I don't know if I've said this. I've said this on a few episodes here and there, but the more I post on TikTok, the less I care about the comments.
Yeah, like, yeah, you can't.
People are arguing among themselves.
Themselves, yeah.
Like I just see, like, 33 comments go up. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? I got cancelled. That's the one thing I say. I'm like, I'm fucked.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's just someone literally replying to their own shit.
Comments, yeah, yeah.
I was like, mate, man.
No, it's wild.
But listen to the podcast if you have an issue.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing, though, as well, is, like, with TikTok, it's so interesting because it is so algorithm-based that It's like market research or something. It's like they're throwing it out there. You've no idea who's going to see it. The funniest thing I find is I do this thing in my head whenever I see a video. I watch the video and then I watch it again. And then I go and I imagine what the comments are going to be. Because, like, so the same piece of content can be put on one side of TikTok and another side of TikTok and have completely different responses. And sometimes I click in and I'm like, see, like, 10,000 dreadful comments. I'm like, Jesus. And then sometimes I see a piece of content that's very average and I see, like, loads of positive comments. It just happened to land on, you know, the right for you pages and the right places. It's absolutely wild.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you can't take any of it too seriously.
Yeah.
But what
interests me so much about the comment section on TikTok is how one user, like, you know when you go on your phone and you do have to, like, type in a comment, you see all the other comments. Why are you repeating the exact same shit?
Yeah,
like, the answer is there, mate.
Yeah,
like, keep scrolling.
Completely.
Like the thumb is there to just go, like, we're competing for a thumb,
and you're competing for attention in the comments.
Exactly. Yeah. And then it's like I was saying this the other day, and if you want, like, you can answer this question as well. But I was actually thinking that if social media were to remove the like button on comments, social media would be a nicer place.
Yeah, probably would.
Because yeah, I think that would. People are like the getting the first boners. Common
plan, yeah. I have a bit of a hot take on this one. Yeah. So the first 5 comments on a post actually define pretty much the comment section, is my opinion, because you see the same comment seen again and again, or variations of the same comment, because people know that they can say the same thing and get away with it because other people have said it, or they want to back that up or whatever it is. But I also think there's what's her name? I'm going to say it's like Victoria Paris or something. She's some massive TikToker. I think I've got that completely wrong, but she's some massive TikToker and she has someone that regulates her comments, right? And I am so for this. I'm so for free speech, but I'm so for this in this particular angle, and this is why I'm so for it. Is she has someone who regulates and gets rid of toxic comments in her thing. Not comments saying she's a bad person. If the comment is well constructed and it's like, oh, I don't like this, Victoria, yada, 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 it obviously stays. But any toxic comments are taken out. And her whole thing is, and I personally completely agree with this, first of all, it's so easy to taint your image of someone. Some of my favorite artists, I think bad things about them. And I know it's solely from a comment I've seen, and I don't know if it's true or not, I have no idea, but I've just read it and now it's in my head. I think, oh, that thing about that or whatever. So I think artists or like influencers have like kind of an obligation to, you know, like be careful with the comment sections, have someone go through, because all the kids are in there, all the other people in there, and your space on the internet should be a safe space if that's what you're providing and that's what you're promoting. You know, I shouldn't be, as a fan of someone, able to go in and see so much dreadful stuff said about this person or all these arguments or be attacked in that comment section. I should be able to, you know, comment and feel comfortable enough and open enough that I can comment in that place. So yeah, I personally think that like anyone who's really big, they should have someone that's regulating it and just going through it and kind of responding to things that need to be answered, but also getting rid of like, you know, just loads of swearing and loads of like,
yeah,
dreadful stuff. Because and if someone really does have something to say about the artist, they go make their own video and they want to go and taint it, 100% go for it. Okay. If you have something to take down the artist, go for it. But just the comment section, I think, is just a mad one. Like,
yeah.
But yeah.
I never thought of it that way. Like, I usually always feel guilty. Like, do I delete this?
I delete.
You delete?
Yeah.
Okay.
And not because I'm scared of it. I don't care. I've had so many hate comments in my world. I don't have an issue with them. But what I do have an issue with them is something that's not true, altering someone who is a fan of me's perception and having this now be a thing in their head, like, oh, I get told I'm from so many different places. I get told, oh no, he's English, or oh no, he's from Galway. I'm not from Galway, or Cork, or Limerick, or Dublin, right?
Yeah.
So, and I've watched conversations and go, yeah, man, he's actually from this town in Galway. Da, 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 da. His thing lives up the road from me. And I'm like, this isn't true. Like, this is just not, and obviously this is just a silly, example. Yeah, like, but I'm like, none of this is true. Like, so that's like, someone should, like, if I had someone in there to go, yo, this is actually not true. He's actually from this place. Da, 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 da. And it's like a community manager, essentially. On Discord, you have a community manager. You have someone that goes through, and if anyone's being harmful or hateful to other people, the stuff gets wiped away. Not in a way of like, no freedom of speech. No, you can't, like, of course, freedom of speech is the most important thing in the world. But just in a regulating that this isn't acceptable here. If you want to go say something bad about the artist, say it publicly and
not behind user. There's a lot of
artists that are doing really dreadful things too, and they should be they should be regulated and they should be taken down.
I do think TikTok has that anonymity to people.
Yeah, of course, you can make any account.
Like, it's like a user barcode.
User 87.
And it's just like, oh, okay. I never thought of it that way. I might just go in and just start getting rid of it. Yeah, someone told me to go back to Russia the other day.
Oh, really? That's it. Like, these places that you know tied to, like.
It's like, dude.
Yeah.
Like, you stereotyped me completely wrong.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah. The social media is great.
Yeah.
I do think
that's incredible.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It, obviously, there are like downsides to that sort of stuff. What's the common critique, if we were to put it that way, that people usually like? Like, what's something that you constantly have to deal with online?
I'm blessed. I don't really deal with anything bad online, if I'm honest. I have a very, very positive community of people. And to be honest, I receive very little hate, thank God. I don't know how I would deal with it.
Touch wood.
But outside of that, just to talk about social media and the issues of social media, is the biggest issue, coming back to this freedom of speech thing, is the centralization of these platforms. So, and this is kind of getting into the Web3 stuff, but you've Google, Facebook, basically Meta now. So you've Meta and you have Google. And these are centralized platforms. They have CEOs, they have owners, they have people, they have agendas. And I don't mean that in like a mad conspiracy way. I mean that like everyone has an agenda. Yeah, I have money. An agenda. Yeah. We all have an agenda. And basically you can be deplatformized and all sorts of people get deplatformized all the time. And it's completely wrong. And why I'm like, the reason I'm so passionate about Web3 is because it's a decentralized system. Everything is completely public, completely open. And anything you build on in a decentralized system can be regulated in a way that someone can literally go, this isn't right, or like this yada yada, but it can open that conversation. You can't just get muted and taken away, which goes against exactly what I just said in the commenting. But when it's these major powers that can literally, I could get deplatformized tomorrow. You don't own your audience, all your followers, all your things. You have no access to them. You don't own them. You should own them. And when I say own them, I don't mean that you like control them, but that you own access to them. When someone signs a privacy or a cookie or whatever it is, that doesn't go to you. You don't get their access. You don't get cool. This, like, I want to hear your podcast. So I have to sign, I have to click something via Spotify. And Spotify now have access to my whole thing. They can change my playlist. They can add songs in. Labels do it all the time. They add random songs that are popping to get the song to go more and chart better or whatever. So with like the Web3 side of things, and this is why like I think social media is really moving towards this. And if it does, it's an incredible thing. It basically, that's my train of thought there. But basically you can regulate everything off of people rather than powers. And you might think, like, I might think you should be deplatformized and someone else might, but it doesn't matter. We just get to like exclude you from whatever we're doing and we go build our own thing instead of having this constant war over this person should be taken down or this person should be taken down. Nobody should be taken down. And I know that's obviously a bit controversial because people do dreadful things and people should see the consequences of the dreadful things that are done to them. But a lot of people are also trying to do very, very good things that don't fit someone else's agenda, so they get completely wiped. And in reality, if you owned your audience, you'd be able to serve that audience so much better because you'd be able to have an open conversation saying, what do you want? Do you want a weekly podcast? Do you want a daily podcast? Do you want a monthly podcast? So instead of you going, what do I do for TikTok's algorithm? You're going, what do I do for my audience? And that's when things change. And I think that's the biggest issue with with social media is like the conditioning and the platforms and the just the ability to deplatformize someone, or because an algorithm changes and that doesn't suit the way you put out your art, that now you can't put out your art the way you wanted and you have to change it again. And it's like, yeah, it's just quite toxic, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Now we're going to get really geeky.
Yeah.
So when it comes to Web3, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, with the announcement of Facebook becoming Meta,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure there was like a strategic thing in the concept of like,
yeah, very much so. Yeah.
Metaverse. Yeah, so now, yeah, unfortunately, yeah. when everyone thinks of the metaverse, it's literally going to be, good one, guys.
Yeah,
like, clap, clap. You know, as in, if I could have thought of that, I would have. Yeah. Like, let's be real here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when you talk about the metaverse, right?
Yeah.
What? Like, if I wanted to access Web3 right now,
mm-hmm.
is there a website?
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, first of all, most things are on a website rather than a social media platform. Twitter, which again, is kind of strange because it goes against the whole thing of the platform aspect of it. But as I said, Web3 is so early, so it's everything's still being developed, still being built. The best way to look at it is you had Web1, Web2, and Web3. Web1 was read-only. So it was like a place, it was the idea that I can look up anything and find information, which is an incredible...
So that's like Google.com.
It's actually before Google, but yes, like the search engine, the concept of a search engine. And posting blog posts and just having a database that people can find knowledge from. Incredible concept. So you had Web1, and a lot of ideas that were in Web1 got lost in Web2. Web2 is the social media era where everything got very corporate very quickly. It all went off of ad selling, like selling ads.
I see.
Whether it's on Facebook, Instagram, Spotify, any platform, they make most of their money from selling ads and from privacy. So from databases and ability to understand behaviors of an audience and see what wealth bracket you're in and sell to you what fits your wealth bracket and all this nuts knowledge that we never had before.
Oh yeah, do you get weird wish ads?
Yeah, I think everyone gets
wish ads in a while.
Well, good. Actually, I don't know if I have either, to be honest, I think. But,
wish ads, yeah.
Yeah, they're wild.
Fuck me, man. But this one time I got like an ad for like an embryo or something. Like, yeah, literally was a photo of an embryo.
Yes, guys.
Carry on, Web2. Yeah, Web2. And ad selling.
So, yeah, Web2 is social media. And it was kind of like the community aspect, not really community, but the aspect that you can create content and interact with that content.
So there's that like globalization feature kind of.
Yeah, and you can build your own audience and all that, which is incredible. What they didn't say, obviously, at the time was that you build it within a restriction of it being Facebook or Instagram. And
like you sign the terms and conditions.
Yeah, of course.
Got it.
So yeah, web one is like read-only. It's exchanging information. Web two is essentially entertainment. It's like the whole culture. And obviously we had so many things like, again, Spotify was an incredible thing that came along and it fixed the whole Napster issue because before that music was free. And there was like a massive issue there and Spotify came in and fixed that issue. And Instagram and all these, TikTok even. TikTok's, in my opinion, the best platform out there. Like it's done so much incredible stuff.
It has.
Even though there's loads of dreadful things to give out about it, it's enabling so much opportunity every day. And then Web3 is decentralizing this whole concept. So instead of having like superpowers, everyone has power and it's on a thing called the blockchain. And the blockchain is essentially a public place where, and again, I'm not going to explain this as well as I would love to, but basically you have different currencies and these currencies are on the blockchain, but everything's public and everything's traceable. So if you do something very dodgy or you do something like, you know, say we launder money between each other, that's public information. Everyone can see that. I don't have to speculate if Debbie laundered money. I can literally just click on and see.
So you see my transaction history?
Yeah. All your transaction histories, all the things you hold in your wallet, all your wealth is completely public, which again, sounds a bit strange, sounds a bit wild. But when everything's public, people play a lot nicer. And on the long term, people play a lot nicer. Obviously, right now in the NFT world and the Web3 world, you have so many scammers, so many people doing dreadful things, but those people think it's some short-term thing that will be gone in a year.
Yeah, like, wasn't there a recent one between, like, Bored Bunny becoming a scammer or something? Have you heard of that?
Yes. Bored Ape Yacht Club they got hacked. So they
Bored Ape Yacht Club.
And they're, like, the most successful kind of NFT culture.
I heard of a bunny one or something that looks very similar to Bored Ape.
There's loads of spin-offs and stuff as well, yeah.
The moment that, like, those apes became viral, it's like every NFT project looks like an ape now.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. There's like a culture of those kind of projects. They're called PFP, so like profile picture projects.
And, but how could the scam happen if everything is so public, you know? So like the recent scam, I'll Google it real quick.
Yeah.
But it was basically like they paid a shit ton of creators, like sort of Floyd Mayweather is not a creator, but like Jake Paul, Floyd Mayweather, that kind of people.
Yeah.
And now it's just like full on, it just paid influencers and like ran off with all that money.
Yeah, and it happens every single day. And the problem is that, and it proves the whole Web2 concept, influencers and artists do not give a flying fuck about their audiences. They don't care what they sell them. They don't care what happens. They're just in it for their own money. And obviously, that's not every influencer, that's not every artist, but predominantly, there's an awful, awful fucking lot of them that are like that.
I see.
And what Web3 does is it puts the pressure on. It puts the pressure on community and on a focus around people and your reputation. Any of those people have done those things, they will never have a reputation in Web3. Like they're gone.
Like, so like if a scam were to happen, it will get exposed quicker via Web3.
Which is probably why you see so many of them being talked about.
I see.
But yeah.
Okay. Versus like if it would have been like in the long run.
Yeah. So if
like, or if they kept getting away with it.
Yeah. You're only going to get away with it once and everyone is going to erupt.
I have this belief that like if you're really bitter about it, it's because you knew and you didn't listen to yourself.
Yeah. Oh, just on Bored Ape Yacht Club.
Okay.
Matthew came into the room and was like, will we buy this? And I was like, it was like 400 quid. I was like, I don't really have 400 quid this week. And he was like, it looks pretty cool. And I was like, and he was like, yeah, I don't think I will either. And then we're like, grand. And
then, my God.
You look where that is now. Like, Jamie, so yeah, bitter thing, 100%. I'm not one bit bitter about Bored Ape Yacht Club.
I genuinely think.
But that's exactly it.
Like, I'd be sitting in front of a millionaire.
I'd literally be a multi-millionaire right now.
That's a tough one to sleep on.
Yeah, well, like, I don't sleep on it. But like what you're saying is, I think it's like you have the decision to be bitter about it or to be like, this is hilarious. I will never miss an opportunity like that again.
And that's when you get it and you make it part of your story and like part of that thing that like lights that fire under your ass.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And a lot of people have that fire, but they get too caught up in their comfort zone and... Yeah. Sometimes that comfort zone is very much like, oh no, it's fine. I am completely for taking care of your mental health.
Yeah.
Completely. But there comes a point where you do have to do something.
Yeah. Whether that is seeking out help, whether that is, you know, like doing whatever you need to do in order to get yourself to where the fuck you want to be, that turning point has to happen at some point, or else you're going to lose it.
Yeah. You owe it to yourself.
You owe it to yourself.
But yeah, as that being said, like it's also one of those things, though, that I think people are built differently in different ways. And like, as much as I can, you know, I can be here and be like, yeah, man, I grinded all the way through the pandemic and yada yada. It's like, you know, I had it easy. Like, I was with a couple of my friends living in a house and not to worry about Jimmy. So, like, there's those sides of it too. I think a lot of people get really offended or really, like, irritated by, like, these kind of conversations because it makes everything feel easy. And it's like, it's not easy. None of it's easy. Like, it's, and again, the situation you're in right now, if you're listening to this, mightn't be relevant to what we're talking about, but there is definitely still something you can take from that situation that you can turn into whatever it is. And you also got to remember, like, when we're in the pandemic, we're, like, living in a world where I never knew if I'd play live again. Like, I didn't, like, and, like, that's the only thing I do this for, is for that live connection. So it's, like, I had to completely, that's why I got so into Web3 and into these things, because, like, well, if the whole thing I care about is now gone, like, I have to find new things to care about, new things to be passionate about. And a lot of the time in life, that'll put you down a path that's a lot more exciting and interesting. As I said, I never thought I was capable of reading a spreadsheet in my mind. Like, being able to understand figures and just like Web3 technology in general. But
Are you proud of where you're at now?
I guess, like, I think you have to be grateful. I'm really big on, like, gratitude lists, so I do, like, very big on just the gratitude list every day. That, so obviously that's pride in itself, because you're grateful for everything around you. I think probably what I'm most proud of is building, I'm not just an artist, and, like, I love art and I love music, but I don't relate to artists that much because I have so many more ambitions. So, like, being able to, like, manage Alexa and develop her out and, like, feel that experience, then also being able to work in XL Talent and work in Web3 and also work on Upbeat. It's like, that's why, again, that's probably why it's Finn and not Upbeat. It's like, I'm just a person behind things, and to have so many channels that I get to, like, push my creativity into is, I'm very proud to have so many channels to do that in, I guess, and so many kind of opportunities to do it, because I remember when it was just working in the bar and you're spent, like, you're just ticking by that time to be yourself again and be who you actually are, whereas I get to do things that, even if it's not strictly music, I found so much more passion in, like, building strategies for other artists, or, you know, just educating artists and helping other people. It's like, that's way more, that's still who I am. Whereas when I was pulling pints in the bar, it probably was an aspect of who I am too, because I love, like, the Irish bar culture in general. I think it's a cool thing. But I'm most proud of the friend group I've acquired, though, like the network.
You have a solid group. By the sounds of it, anyways.
Yeah, they're a pretty incredible group. And again, I'm only, like, it's not like they're my friend group. They're just a group of people that I'm included in that group of. It in no way kind of revolves around me. But that group of people is incredibly inspiring. And at the moment, it's mostly just people from usually, like, rural walks of life, which is what I find so interesting. Because I came to Dublin, made all these friends, but everyone I made a friend with was from some random small town in Ireland, or from the west of Ireland most of the time. So kind of being able to unify that and bring that forward and see the impact across so many different things that are being worked on outside. And it also just learning and seeing, you know, like, actually being as excited about someone else succeeding in what they're doing, whether it's, like, coding or video or whatever. Sorry, I'm probably rambling at this point. But yeah, I think that's so exciting. Having to actually be passionate, excited about other people because they are doing stuff that's so great is a blessing in itself.
It's a competition against yourself at the end of the day. It is not against other people.
No.
And I think that is something from a small country thing.
Yeah, it's that competition against people.
Against people, which I do get, because I'm sure that, like, at some point in time you would have gotten screwed over.
Yeah, I've been fucked over so many times.
Exactly.
But I don't. But I'm not annoyed by any of it.
At the end of the day, it's on them.
Yeah.
Like, it's at that point where you have to, like, let it go and kind of, like, double down into what it is. I appreciate what you're saying and, like, how you're acknowledging creativity in more than just music, design.
I think even seeing it just as, like, self-serving. Like, music's not self-serving, if you get me. Like, when you're making these songs, even when someone's complimenting me, I'm like, man, you sang so good at that, or you like wrote those lyrics so good. It's like, yes, that's sick, and like I can take that as a compliment for me. But the fact that the bigger ethos of what I'm trying to get across in this song is connecting with someone is way more important to me, because that's not me, Jamie. That's the whole thing in itself. You're connecting with this idea in the song, and there's lots of other people that connect with that, so that's brilliant. And I think when you take music off of yourself as an artist and a brand, and you're like, oh, like, Jamie, it's great for me, I love it, I love all the compliments, it's all lovely, it's wonderful having going places and people like, oh man, you do that, it's great, it's nothing like it. But if that's all you're living for, it's not really that
and
much
it can't be opinion. Taken away from
yeah,
you
exactly yeah, yeah.
Which so, is like what we just mentioned there
yeah.
With Hi-Viz, so that this little NFT thing, little, sorry.
No, it's tiny. It's tiny at the moment.
Okay.
You're right.
All right, cheers. I didn't mean to be like.
Yeah, no, you're like.
This thing that you have going. What are the benefits for someone who wants to sign up to your community?
Yeah, so like to sign up, just off the bat, to sign up the community, you don't need to pay anything. Like just join the Discord. There's like a little forum in there where you can get your Hyperpunk token. And if you have that Hyperpunk token, you're good, you're a part of it. But if you're on the collector end, or you're on an end where this is something that you're like interested in investing in, what the different tiers are, the highest tier allows you basically governance within like some of the decisions that are made with the treasury, because there'll be a treasury around Hi-Viz that'll ideally come from the streams from the song, because there's very little money made off of music. And with a lot of NFT projects, you'll see that a small percentage of the song goes to the collectors, but I don't personally agree with that, because it's insignificant, it's zero, it's not very much money. Whereas if you get a song to 1 million streams and there's like $3,000 made from that, or $4,000 depending, putting that into a treasury that a community can decide on what it's done with, I think is a way more exciting approach, because you can actually impact, you know, if one group of people spend $3,000 or $4,000 on something, you can kind of get an impact. Whereas if everyone gets 20 quid, it's like, you know, what can you really do with 20 quid?
Okay, so what you're saying is, if you had a song that got 1 million streams and you got $3,000, would that 3K go to them?
It goes into the Hi-Viz treasury for this specific rollout on this thing. Not the rest of my music doesn't, just this song and this project that's been worked on.
So like you would decide the percentage on that?
No, so I run it, but basically if you're one of the hyper space holders, we're going to discuss options with those people. We're like, look, do we want to do this thing with this money? Do we want to do this thing? There's this dope artist in here that's been really showing up at
the
moment. The
money's still in your pocket.
Yeah. Technically, yeah.
They have a say on what you do next.
Yeah, so we open it and we go, look, we've seen this dope artist here. They've been really showing up. Like, they've been putting out some great music. Maybe we should get behind that.
Yeah.
Or like even put out their own thing. Or maybe it's like that we throw an event and we book an artist that we all love to perform at the event. And
I guess it.
Things like that. Again, obviously all this stuff is very early days. It's all being fleshed out. So yeah, that's like the main thing. And then outside of that, they get these hoodies, they get the merch, they get...
I want one.
we'll sort you out.
Go on.
And they get a wearable version. So wearables are like basically clothes that you can wear in the metaverse. So they get this and this in the metaverse.
In the VR world.
Yeah.
Club Penguin.
Club Penguin world. And they can wear that in there. And there's also an NFT that'll be in their like little wallet. Outside of that as well, obviously they get to know that they're impacting the community. They get their own guest list for events. So not only do they get to come to the event, but they can bring their own guest list of people, which I think is kind of a cool
point,
because the whole point of this is like to open access. It's not to gate access and like stop it. It's to that if you're a holder and you're like, oh well, I have this cool thing that we can all go to, like, and I'm not asking you to bring anything, you just have to come. Like, that's in itself kind of a nice thing. So that was kind of the focus point, was like, how can we create interactions where other people get to get involved without them having to necessarily spend money or do anything that is like not what they want to do. There's some of the main things. There's a list. I'm not sure off the top of my head what the rest of the list says. But obviously they get the project early. They get access to like, so everyone who has a collector on the project will be involved in the rollout and like the conversations around how it comes out, and you know, they get on release music and stuff like that. But there, yeah, some of the rough benefits. But the main one is essentially that you're betting on an artist, and that artist, obviously, if they go on to be successful, you hold the first NFT of that artist, and that in itself is kind of an exciting thing.
And you're also helping them out with...
Yeah, and in this case, the whole community, token. Because, you know, there's some kid in there that starts working on stuff, and they made like, you know, whatever support they got from Hi-Viz, and you know that you put a couple quid into Hi-Viz, you're like, oh, well, sick. I was actually kind of a part of this other artist or this other creator having this incredible success. And even right now, like, if you go into Hi-Viz and you look at the people that are in there, like, there's people doing really incredible things that are very, very, very successful. So even right now, it's like, that's already kind of a guaranteed thing. That's not like a foreseen thing. Like, there's only like 150 people in Hi-Viz, and I say like 40 of them are fairly like high profile people. So yeah, that's whatever you want to take from that.
No, that's really well thought out. Like, the one thing that I thought of over there was, I'm gonna bring out the paper. I usually always do this when it comes to like talking about numbers, because I am shit.
Yeah,
not good
at numbers either.
Like, with those three tiers, right? Like, the most expensive one that you had is where they kind of have access on decisions.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say this to like offend anyone or anything, but usually when there is that like monetary value there, there's probably like a proven track record that they have done a good few decisions in their life.
Yeah.
So let's say like the more expensive that tier is, the higher level decisions that you are going to get, like higher level opinions that you are going to get over there. Because let's say if someone had a spare fucking 1.5k to give you, this person probably has quite a bit.
Yeah.
Most likely.
The main kind of value proposition there is that if they have put, say, just for example, 1.5k in to... And obviously a large amount of the Hyperpump money has been spent on the marketing of the project. So when that song reaches like a million streams, that they're kind of one of the key. So it's not necessarily off their intelligence, but because they put so much into it, they should be able to decide what happens with the money.
I'm also
though kind of funny on the whole governance thing, because I also don't like you end up back at the same problem. The people who have loads of money get to decide what happens. So I think that's where like the Hi-Viz community is not decided on by the people who put in large amounts of money, but just this one aspect I thought would be cool, because if you're putting in that money, you deserve to see what happens to the money that comes back.
For sure.
But yeah, just outside of that, like, just because you've put in a load of money does not mean you get to
you're not going to get the final say on what you do.
Just
for sure
what happens with that treasury bit.
But no, it does make sense to a certain extent, where it's kind of like, okay, look, this is who I know, this is what can be done. And then you will obviously, with this opinions and like this feedback that you would have gathered, can go back to the ones that like have stuck around for a long time and were there and like got the free NFT and whatnot, and be like, what you think?
Exactly. And you create that conversation and open dialogue around different decisions, and I think that's really, really important for an audience, especially like, obviously, if you're signing up and you're spending all this time here, you're not just a normal fan. You're not somebody who just listens to music. No. You're actually involved and invested, whether it's time or money, in this whole thing. So it's important that you're heard, so that you're seen within the community.
Fucking love it. It's so cool. It's like probably Patreon are like worrying a little bit to a certain extent.
It's essentially Patreon, but I think
without the fees.
Yeah, Patreon has so many problems, Jamie. Like, Patreon from the bat is like, an artist should not be, like, artists are so perceived daily as begging. Like, artists beg all the time. They're begging for everything, whether it's begging for you to, like, I have to beg all the time. I have to beg for you to, like, buy my song to hit the chart, or I have to beg you to pre-save my song, or yada, yada, yada. And I think that in itself is a wrong representation of how an artist should be perceived. I shouldn't have to beg people to buy a coffee for me to, you know, fund my Patreon or yada yada. I should know that I'm giving value, that people see the value in and go, I'm getting behind this because it's of value. I shouldn't have to be like, oh fuck yeah, well, I give Finn a coffee, yada yada, there's his €3, perfect.
Wouldn't it be the same thing though, where you're asking people I haven't seen you do it, but wouldn't it be the same thing as like asking people to join your Web3 community, or no?
It is, but the difference is you don't ask. There's no ask. This is a place you either want to be or you don't want to be. I don't want you here if you don't want to be here. If you feel like this is connecting with you and this is makes sense to you, whether it's with your time, whether it's with your money, or whether it's whatever, I know it's a value. I know it's a value to a certain point. Is it a value to millions of people? I don't know. Is it a value to hundreds of people? I don't know. But I know it's a value because it's got a proven record, and so many people have been successful within this group of people that have done incredible things in many different fields. But the whole point of the Hi-Viz thing, and again, it's that revolutionizing thing, an artist should not have to beg for things if what they're doing is really great. So it kind of comes back to that, is like focusing on actually building the thing and making sure it is great, and then just saying it. And if people say it, and anytime I have talked about it, it's usually fairly positively received. But yeah, again, like if it's not, you can be a fan of upbeat and not be in high viz. Like you can just listen to so many artists. Like there's so many artists, like for example, Dave. Dave is one of my favorite artists, and I didn't realize I didn't follow Dave on Instagram till like.
Don't tell me that Dave is in high viz.
No, Dave's not in high viz now.
I just like stop this and like fucking purchase one
point. Yeah.
Carry on.
But for example, I didn't follow Dave on Instagram till maybe like 6 months ago. But Dave's by far one of my favorite artists.
True.
And that's the whole point as well. I'm aware that just because you might just listen to music does not make you less of a fan. It doesn't make you less of anything. There's so many different ways to appreciate an artist, but I basically want this community to give you as many options of different ways to be appreciated. There's a supporter in the high-vis community called Leanne, right? And Leanne comments on every single post I put up. She supports everything, right? And that value in itself is, again, worth way more than like a financial backing or like a, you know, if like, I don't know, whatever other things. If she was like an influencer that was had a million followers and was posting, it's like, that's cool. But the actual support Leanne has shown over like 6 months or probably more now, every single post, every single day, that in itself is a valuable thing. So it's like with Hi-Viz, I want to identify as many different ways that people are showing their support, because it's not just one way.
Yeah.
And then finding ways to reward those people that are showing whatever.
And it's like the people behind the account. Lots of like one thing that's happening with social media right now, and I've seen it being corrected a few times from creators where like someone goes, the most underrated account on this app.
Yeah.
And they correct them. Person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like you're person, saying you're not an account. Leanne.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You're not saying like buttface 1234. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
Leanne, you're not a buttface.
But I think that's important as well, like getting to know and actually hear the stories of people in your community, because, and obviously that's only applicable at this level. Like as things get a lot bigger and whatever, that becomes a lot more difficult to do. But I think
while
it is doable, do it.
Well, no, but like those people are always going to be, there's something about like the early fans that like stick around, you know, for a long time. That's there is that novelty to them for sure. I think that's like just the nice thing. Of course, I want this thing to grow for you, and you want it to grow.
Yeah, yeah.
But on a name by name basis.
Yeah, it's obviously hard to do on a bigger scale.
The community manager in the future will.
Yeah, yeah. Will but know also, them. That's the thing as well, is that if you like sow those seeds with the first 100 people or first 1,000 people, the likes of a Leanne becomes someone in the community. She's not just a fan anymore. She's someone that's like, no, like I know you what Finn would like or want, or like I know Finn stands by this, and what you're saying right there, it does not stand by that. And it's that whole thing of like, you're empowering other people to have a voice in this thing, so that when other people come in, you can point them towards these different people. And
for sure.
Again, maybe I might be rambling at this point, but
I think we covered everything. I know that you're moving to London soon.
Yeah, so I'm kind of moving. I've been back and forth from London for like the last 6 months. I'm not exactly sure if I'm moving for sure at the moment, but I'm going over for a while again anyway. And
how long is a while for you?
A month anyway, and then so I kind of bounce between Spain, Ireland, and
Spain.
London. Yeah, Barcelona is incredible. Like Barcelona is such a spot, and I have a lot of friends over there. Again, another place that's like super creative. If we're talking about like standard of living, Barcelona just have it figured out on like the core basis of like the working class, just are a lot happier there than they're here. But yeah, I kind of bounce between those two places. But we're trying to make like an exhale house in London. But it's just finding the right house at the moment, which is a bit.
So it's going to be difficult. Like a creator house.
So we've always had an exhale house. So exhale houses started in Galway during the pandemic, and then we had one in Athlone, and then we had one in Barcelona, and then we kind of moved around. It's just me and my friends. And we're just trying to figure out one, because we're all kind of living in different places at the moment, which is weird because it's never been like that. It's like the TikTok house, but no one's making TikToks. Everyone's like working on laptops and recording songs. But yeah,
and drinking a lot of pints.
Every now and then.
Unless someone wants to be sober. All right, okay, I think we got it.
I think we got an awful lot there. Thank you very much for having me. Much
cheers. Thank you so much for joining me, and thank you everyone for listening. I appreciate you.
Thank you for coming through. Longer Days Collective.